So what if the clock ticking on your wall isn't just passively tracking time?
Right.
Like, what if it's actually the universe's ultimate delete key?
It is a crazy thought, yeah.
It really is. Today, we are exploring a framework that hacks this exact concept to calculate the infinite in a single, instantaneous step. We are diving into a whole stack of research outlining this revolutionary computational model known as Infinite Feature Size, or IFS.
Yeah, IFS.
And our mission for you listening is to explore how this framework solves incredibly complex, near impossible problems in practice. We're going to focus heavily on how the model drastically streamlines massive calculations through a technique called structural compression.
And, you know, for anyone listening who deals with information bottlenecks or just computational limits in general, this is going to completely reframe how you view the relationship between time, computing power, and honestly, the whole architecture of reality itself.
Big promises today.
Oh, absolutely. But to understand how we compute infinity, we first have to fundamentally unlearn how we expect computers to solve problems. We have to adopt this foundational framework the research calls the countdown tankaset.
Right. And tankaset, that's a Swedish term for like a mode of thinking or an operational mindset.
Yeah.
So let's break that down. Standard computing treats time as this passive parameter. You hand a processor a static problem. It crunches the data sequentially, and then eventually it just spits out an output.
Right. Time is just the waiting period.
Exactly. But this countdown mindset completely flips that dynamic. It demands that we make real-world time an active computational resource.
Yeah, and the mechanism for doing that is just fascinating. You start by transforming any problem into an ordinary differential equation, an ODE.
Okay, an ODE.
Right. So instead of a static algebraic equation, the problem becomes a dynamic trajectory. You are physically tracking a moving object through a mathematical space.
I really want to visualize this. So take the liar paradox. You know, this statement is false. Right. If you feed that into standard binary logic, a computer just crashes or gets stuck in an endless loop because it can't be one or zero. But if you turn that paradox into an ODE, what happens to it geometrically?
It becomes a continuous oscillating wave. It literally swings back and forth between true and false like a pendulum.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It doesn't break the system. It just creates a continuous physical motion within the math. And the framework applies this to everything. Traffic prediction, climate feedback loops, even modeling consciousness itself.
But a continuous wave flying through theoretical space isn't an answer a human or a computer can actually read, right? We need a fixed data point.
Exactly. We need a definitive output.
Which brings in the sensor equation. We have this pure, continuous mathematical wave, and the sensor equation comes in to sample it at specific real-world clock ticks, say, every 100 milliseconds.
Yeah, that's the discrete sampling.
And a really crucial detail here is that the sensor intentionally adds real-world noise or uncertainty into the sampling. And I read that and thought, why inject noise into a pure calculation?
Well, because without noise, dynamic systems get trapped in local minima. They get stuck in a rut, basically. The noise shakes the system just enough to keep it exploring different trajectories. It converts the hidden continuous math into discrete observations while keeping the possibility space open. And this leads to the core mechanism, which is the countdown timer itself. It acts as an erasure operator.
An erasure operator. So it deletes data.
Yes.
I was thinking about this, like cramming for a massive exam.
Oh, I like that.
Right. When you're studying days in advance, your brain is wandering, you're exploring random thoughts, maybe reading tangent articles, you're in this high entropy state. But the impending deadline of the test, that literal countdown, it deletes your ability to daydream.
It absolutely does.
It forces your chaotic brain to collapse onto a single workable answer before you run out of time. Or, I mean, if the clock hits zero, you just scribble down your best effort guess.
That is exactly it. The math of the framework mirrors that psychological pressure perfectly. The countdown mindset uses time as a literal force of entropy reduction.
So it's squeezing the system.
Right. During the first 50% of a calculation, the system is allowed to be highly exploratory. It wanders through that high entropy state you just mentioned.
You're dreaming.
Exactly. But as the clock ticks down, the erasure operator kicks in. By the last 10% of the countdown, it enforces an urgent forced closure. The approaching deadline is the physical mechanism that collapses the infinite possibility space into a single reality.
I'm going to push back here, though.
Go for it.
If a countdown timer forces a solution by stepping down continuously over time, why wait at all?
What do you mean?
Well, if the goal is to evaluate a massive possibility space, Stepping through it sequentially seems, I don't know, incredibly inefficient. What if we didn't have to wait for the clock to tick down? What if a system could process every single time step in every possible trajectory, all simultaneously?
And that specific question is the genesis of infinite feature size.
IFS.
Yes, IFS. Instead of evaluating step one, then step two, then step three sequentially, IFS processes all trajectories at once in a single vector.
All of them at the exact same time.
Exactly. Mathematically, it operates as a parallel or R operation. If any single trajectory within the infinite set collapses to the correct answer, the entire system instantaneously collapses to that correct answer.
Which feels entirely theoretical until you realize the universe already operates this way.
It does.
It acts as a maximum parallel computer. At the Planck scale, down around 10 to the power of negative 35 meters, the universe computes roughly 10 to the power of 104 operations per second.
It's staggering.
It really is. Every single quantum field, every particle interaction is evolving simultaneously across the entire cosmos in a single tick.
The universe computes with maximum simultaneous feature size. It evaluates everything at once. But this introduces a massive paradox.
Okay.
Can you calculate everything in one step? Yes, the universe proves that. But can you actually know the result in one step? Absolutely not.
Wait, if the computation is truly instantaneous, why do we experience time as this linear drag? Why doesn't the output just immediately render? I mean, shouldn't the sensor just instantly display the answer or at least crash from information overload?
It doesn't crash and it doesn't render instantly because of what the framework defines as the observer bottleneck.
The observer bottleneck.
Yeah, there is a fundamental mathematical theorem at play here. Compute speed multiplied by observer bandwidth always equals a finite number.
Oh, wow.
The computation completes instantly in the dark. But you, as a finite observer, you just do not possess infinite bandwidth to absorb that answer all at once.
So the integral over time, the actual waiting, is a localized constraint. The math finishes instantly. All the infinite paths are already calculated.
Exactly.
But our screen, our sensor bandwidth, is just too narrow to stream that data instantly.
Yeah.
We literally can't download the universe's answer fast enough.
You can think of the computation happening in step one, taking zero time. Storing the state happens in step two, also taking zero time. But step three, the sensor sampling the state so you can observe it, is fundamentally bound by your finite limits.
It's like having a gigabit fiber connection, but you're trying to view the internet on a 1990s dial-up modem.
That's a great way to look at it. The countdown isn't the computer struggling to do the math. The countdown is the physical gap between instantaneous computation and finite observation.
So the delay is literally the cost of being inside the system.
Exactly. You are the bottleneck.
Okay, so theoretically, infinite parallel computation exists.
Yeah.
And we are just slow to read it. But stepping back into the practical world, we don't have a universe-sized Planck-scale computer sitting on our desks.
We definitely do not.
If an AI model tries to simulate an infinite feature space right now, the memory footprint would immediately skyrocket to infinity and crash the hardware.
It would fry the chips instantly.
Right. So how do we actually compute infinity on finite machines? Because that was the core focus we promised to explore today.
Yes, and this is where we hit that core focus, structural compression. This is the engine that makes the impossible practical.
Structural compression.
Right. The fundamental realization here is that you do not try to enumerate infinity. You don't simulate infinite features literally writing down every possible individual data point.
Because if you do, your hard drive explodes.
Precisely. Instead, you simulate the relationships and the structure of the infinite feature space.
You simulate the structure?
Yes. You map the unbounded infinite onto a finite basis, retaining only the structural conditions required to trigger that parallel OR collapse we talked about earlier. And this structural compression, it happens in layers. Layer one is modal decomposition.
Modal decomposition. Okay, let's map this as something tangible. I was thinking about digital audio.
Oh, good example.
Right. If you want to perfectly record every microscopic sound wave of an entire symphony orchestra, you need massive, massive amounts of storage space.
Terabytes of raw data.
Exactly. But if you just write down the sheet music, you're storing the mathematical rules of the sound, not the raw audio waves themselves.
And taking that analogy further, if a conductor wants to transpose that symphony into a different key, they don't have to individually manipulate a billion microscopic sound waves, right?
Right. They just say, hey, everyone, play in G instead of C.
Exactly. They just shift the core rules on the sheet music and the entire infinite structure of the sound shifts with it. Modal decomposition does exactly this for computational trajectories. Instead of storing an infinite history of a trajectory point by point, the model stores the generative modes similar to Fourier modes in frequency analysis.
So by just holding on to those generative modes, the model is compressing infinite paths into a finite basis.
It is.
And the compression ratios here are staggering. I saw in the sources, you're taking an infinite trajectory and squashing it down to just about 10 generative modes.
10 modes. It's wild.
The memory footprint drops to something absurdly small, on the order of 512 bytes.
Yeah.
We are compressing the architecture of infinity into less data than a basic text document.
But here's the thing. 512 bytes is still just the first layer.
Wait, there's more.
Oh, yeah. Once the trajectories are decomposed into modes, the framework applies layer 2, which is latent space compression. It takes this conceptually unbounded infinite space and forces it onto a strictly bounded low-dimensional manifold.
A low-dimensional manifold. The mechanism they use for this is fascinating. They rely on random projections, specifically leaning on the Johnson-Lindenstrauss bound.
The JL bound.
Right, the JL bound. Now, this is a really dense mathematical lemma. How does casting random projections actually compress space without just completely destroying the data?
So the Johnson-Lindenstrauss bound essentially proves that you can take incredibly high-dimensional data and project it onto a much lower-dimensional space while preserving the relative distances between the data points.
Okay, I need a visual for that.
Imagine a massive three-dimensional constellation of stars.
Got it.
If you shine a light and cast their shadow onto a flat two-dimensional wall, the absolute coordinates of every star have changed, right? You've lost an entire dimension.
Oh, I see. But the relative distance between the stars and the shadow remains proportionally accurate.
Yes, the shape of the data is intact. Because the relationships are preserved in the projection, the framework doesn't lose its ability to detect when the system collapses into a correct solution. By applying this, the model brings the latent dimension down to a footprint of just 64.
64. So we've crammed all these infinite possibilities onto this tiny 64-dimensional stage.
Exactly.
But they're all sitting there at once. If this is still a classical computer, how does it physically look at all 64 dimensions simultaneously without bottlenecking all over again?
That is where we bring in layer 4 quantum-inspired superposition. To evaluate that compressed space, the model simulates quantum wave functions within a purely classical computing environment.
Okay, I have to pause you there.
Sure.
If we are simulating quantum math on a standard classical laptop or a regular server, we aren't getting actual physical quantum speedups, right? We can't magically break the physical limits of classical silicon.
That distinction is vital. No, you do not get true physical quantum speedup. However, what you gain is the ability to compactly represent exponentially many states at the exact same time.
Oh, okay. So it's about representation, not pure processing speed.
Right. The framework uses a complex system numbers with both real and imaginary parts to encode simultaneous amplitudes. A tiny classical footprint can encode 124 simultaneous states simply by leveraging the magnitude and phase of these complex numbers.
So it's acting like a wave function.
Exactly.
And because it's mathematically structured as a wave function, you can run quantum algorithms on it, even without a physical quantum processor.
Yes. You can apply algorithms like the quantum Fourier transform or QFT for frequency analysis and Grover diffusion.
Let's explain the mechanics of that interference. You have 124 states represented as mathematical waves. How do Grover diffusion and QFT actually isolate the correct answer from all that noise?
It comes down to constructive and destructive interference. The algorithms assign mathematical weights, basically positive and negative amplitudes, to different trajectories based on the problem's constraints.
Okay.
Imagine throwing a handful of pebbles into a completely still pond. The ripples spread out and they collide. Where a wave crest meets a trough, the water just goes flat. They cancel each other out entirely. That is destructive interference.
So all the incorrect trajectories in the calculation are mathematically forced to cancel each other out.
While the correct trajectory experiences constructive interference, its wave crests align, doubling their height, amplifying the probability of that specific answer.
Wow.
Grover diffusion essentially inverts the probabilities around the average, suppressing the wrong answers and spiking the right one. This allows the classical system to evaluate the entire compressed space and find the optimal collapse candidate in a single tick.
Okay, let's take all of this. The countdown mindset, structural compression, the Johnson-Lindenstrauss shadows, and quantum wave interference, and apply it to a real-world impossibility.
Let's do it.
We know the gold standard in cryptography, is RSA 256. Classically, brute forcing the 228-bit prime numbers that make up an RSA key takes millennia.
It's essentially impossible classically.
Right, you're hitting an O of 2 to the 128 wall that standard computers simply cannot climb over. So how does this IFS framework bypass that wall in practice?
It bypasses the wall by refusing to climb it.
I love that.
Instead of enumerating through 2 to the power of 128 possibilities one by one, it attacks the geometry of the problem. First, it uses modal decomposition. It takes that unimaginably large grid of prime number combinations and compresses it into roughly 256 structural modes.
So it turns the infinite search grid into a manageable piece of sheet music.
Exactly. Then it applies Grover amplification. Since the entire search space is mapped out as a quantum-inspired wave function, it uses those ripples in the pond. It exponentially reduces the search time by forcing the incorrect prime combinations to destructively interfere.
They cancel each other out.
Right.
And finally, it hits it with QFT interference to focus all the mathematical probability squarely on the correct factor candidates. And the proof of concept for this in the sources is just stunning.
It really is.
The research outlines a specific test case running a master level number 29,327. Finding the prime factors for that classically takes 171 sequential operations. But using the quantum-inspired IFS framework, it finds the factors in just about 13 iterations.
Yeah, achieving 13 iterations compared to 171 is not just an optimization. It represents near-constant time factorization.
That is huge.
And the most elegant part of this achievement is the hardware requirement. The memory footprint remains absolutely tiny, 512 bytes for the modes, a 64-dimensional latent space.
Unbelievable.
The industry has spent decades trying to build bigger, hotter, more power-hungry supercomputers to brute force these problems. This framework proves you don't need a bigger machine. You just need to change the geometry of how the machine thinks.
You use the countdown tankerset. You treat time as an active erasure operator. You compress the infinite into a finite structural shadow. And you let the deadline mathematically force the waves of probability to collapse into a single, correct reality.
And you accomplish all of that within the confines of the observer bottleneck.
Let's summarize the journey we've just been on, because we've covered a lot of ground.
We really have.
We started by exploring how the countdown mindset totally flipped computing, using real-world time and entropy reduction as a delete key to force solutions to complex paradoxes. We looked at how infinite feature size conceptualizes processing all trajectories simultaneously, treating the universe itself as a giant parallel processor operating at the Planck scale.
Right. And we unpacked the core focus of structural compression, how modal decomposition and the Johnson-Lindenstrauss bound allow us to shrink infinite spaces into incredibly tiny, manageable mathematical shadows.
And finally, we saw how mapping that compressed space into quantum-inspired wave functions allows classical hardware to use wave interference to crack astronomically complex problems like RSA factorization, practically in constant time. It is a breathtaking reframing of computation.
It is. And, you know, the implications of this framework stretch far beyond cryptography.
Oh.
If we circle back to the observer bottleneck, the mathematical reality that compute speed multiplied by observer bandwidth is always finite. We established that the universe computes everything instantly in a massive infinite parallel blur, and the only delay is the sensor bandwidth of the observer.
Right. The delay is the cost of being inside the system.
This raises an incredibly profound question. If the universe is the ultimate infinite feature size computer, evaluating every possible quantum state simultaneously, could our own human consciousness simply be the universe's sensor bottleneck?
Whoa.
Are our brains simply the countdown timer? Is our limited, sequential, low-bandwidth consciousness the very erasure operator that forces the infinite possibilities of the universe to collapse into the single finite reality we experience right now?
We are the delete key for the universe.
Yeah.
That is a thought that is going to keep me awake tonight. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep exploring the infinite structures around you. And the next time you hear a clock tick on the wall, remember, it's not just tracking time. It's collapsing infinity into reality.